Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon as the smooth jazz plays. 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Tyrone Johnson here with you until 6. Connor Thomas producing and doing updates. 610-632-0975. And I'm in a great mood today. This was a this was a good day. You wouldn't know it necessarily, but today's a good day. And we start with the word of today because it's a great day. And it's margins. It's margins. And boy, have we forgotten that. And boy, have we been hypocritical in the last 24 hours. And we must do better. All right, margins. When you're looking at pro sports across the board, it's a given that you have to have star players. It's also a given that you have to have role players. And what the Sixers needed to do yesterday, they had one major, major goal that they had to accomplish yesterday. And what was that goal? To add a player who would help them this upcoming season on the margins. Nobody, if you noticed, nobody traded for a star player during the draft. Other draft picks were traded, things were traded. But if you notice, no stars. Now, maybe they drafted a star, and I think Orlando got it right with the first pick. I think OKC got it wrong with the second pick. I think picks 3 and 4 would be pretty good. That's how I think it's going to go in the draft. There'll be some surprises. But if you notice, no one traded a star. You notice Kyrie didn't get moved. Like, stars didn't get moved. Because yesterday was about, for the good teams, what you do along the margins. And the Sixers had to do one thing. We know their holes. We know that they did not have enough good players to play in the playoffs. Not enough trustable NBA players. And then rather than draft one at 23 overall, which was a crapshoot, and truth be told, a lot of the players that I kind of liked ended up getting taken 16, 17, 18. They started to fall as the draft was going along. Like at like 12, 13, even 15, it was like, huh, Sixers might have a decent player actually available. Boom, 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 boom. Nope. Nope. No, they wouldn't have. Maybe there's a guy with an outside chance of helping them this year. Nope. So what they did was, we knew Danny Green was hurt and older. So he wasn't going to be back. They took Danny Green. They took the 23rd overall pick, traded to Memphis for Melton, who, by the way, is a good basketball player who will help them this year. And yet there are people who are unhappy. And the worst part about it is they didn't even listen to themselves while they're being unhappy. And that's the part that upsets me the most. Now, let me lay this out. I put it on social media earlier. Let me lay this out. We'll get Connor's thoughts. All right. So when we were talking about P.J. Tucker, people said, oh, he's too old. So then they trade for a player who's 24 years old. He turned 24, I checked, 27 days ago. It's borderline. You can still wish him happy birthday. That's how recently he turned 24 years old. Last I checked, that's not old. He also has played in the league and only makes about $8 million, which, and you consider it was $10 million for Danny Green, plus the cost of the pick, you actually saved money in the deal while making your team better. Now, earlier this week, people were calling and saying, well, I want a player, forget P.J. Tucker. I want Gary Payton II. Okay. Now, just since, let's follow me there. Okay, sure. Let's discuss that. He's 24 years old. 24 years old, talking about him. Gary Payton II is 29 years old. All right, so if you want younger, this move did that. People are complaining about size. Gary Payton II, 6'3". No, I'm 6'2" with long arms. Gary Payton II averaged 7 points a game. Melton averaged 10 points a game. Gary Payton II shot under 36% from three on less attempts. Melton shot better than 37% from three. There is literally nothing to complain about in Sixers land. We know the offseason's not over, but it's not over for anyone. Yesterday was about the margins and more, I wonder, are we still in the city of Philadelphia, a town that knows basketball, that understands sports, or instead, perhaps we're in the twilight zone? Is that where we are? The Twilight Zone, yes. A place where Philadelphia fans get exactly what they ask for, and yet they're still unhappy. Why? You needed a player who could help you this year. You didn't want a player who was old. He's young. You wanted a player that could make an open three. Why? Why? By golly, he can. You wanted a guy who could play defense because they weren't good enough on perimeter defense. What? He's your most athletic guard the moment he shows up. He covers up for the faults that Maxey has on the defensive end. Why all of Philadelphia is overjoyed today, right? Maybe we're not in Philadelphia anymore, people. Maybe, just maybe, we've been teleported to a place far, far away where logic and reason no longer matters. Perhaps we are once again in the Twilight Zone. 610-632-0975. I don't understand this. I'm not saying this move now makes the Sixers NBA champions, but no move made yesterday will make someone an NBA champion this season. Now, if you want to say somebody at the top of the draft will lead eventually, I really like what the Pistons are doing, for example. And maybe eventually they have Detroit basketball and they're doing their thing and they win a title again. But no individual move made yesterday changed the fortunes of a title team yesterday. But you know what the Sixers did? They did what they had to do. They got better. The player's young, can make a three, he's athletic, he's literally everything we said we wanted, and still there's people upset about it. Connor, what the hell's going on?
I don't know what to tell you. I had no issue with the move. I don't understand why people had issues with the move. I don't know what they wanted to see happen, because we came into this offseason knowing the limitations of even doing what they just did, which is making the bench better. It was already hard enough to make moves like the ones they made yesterday. That was already a struggle, because the move they made yesterday probably wasn't even the first move they were trying to make. And they probably found out that Matisse Thybulle, who they were actively shopping, doesn't have enough value around the league for them to actually do something. So this is an ancillary move, and it still made them better. What? I don't understand what you're worried about.
I don't understand it. And here's the other part. Booney looked up some great stats. I appreciate it. The NBA analytics. Matter of fact, forget me. What do I know? So Rich Hoffman will be on at 3 o'clock. We'll talk to him about it. Also, I saw in The Athletic that there was an outside guy who graded the trade. All right? Here it is. Zach Harper from The Athletic covers the league at large. He grades the trade. Now, we all went to school. We know what a good and bad grade is. You agree with that, right? We know what good grades are, right? Well, funny you should say that. He grades this trade for the Sixers an A+. Not an A. An A+. He'll fit nicely next to James Harden. He'll fit nicely next to Tyrese Maxey. And yes, you could even play him with both guys on the floor at the same time. The odds of the Sixers getting a ready-made player at 23 in this draft were very low. That's how you execute. Grade A+. And yet I got to hear, oh, Tyrone, no, I don't like him. This is, you want you, if you want to be honest with me, if you want to be honest, and this is not an insult to anyone, you didn't watch him play. And that's okay, by the way. You know how many players in this draft, because I don't watch the G League regularly, because I don't have time and games aren't all on TV, and the European players, I haven't seen other guys play in the draft. That's okay. If you haven't seen them, then just say you'll wait and see. But the fact that this isn't unanimous, just a simple of, wow, the Sixers got better, shows that we're out of our minds. And please recognize that on the margins, this team got better. In the playoffs, he can defend someone. In the playoffs, he can make an open shot. And in the playoffs, he can dunk on somebody. What more do you want? 610-632-0975. And also, in addition to, JT Realmuto hit a home run yesterday. It was his first one of the entire month. Phillies go out west. They win 6-2 over the Padres. Ranger Suarez looks good. Wow, this was a pretty good win. But the crazy thing is, and this is what made me think, it wasn't just what they won. The Phillies, for the most part, have been winning. But JT Realmuto hit a home run. Perhaps they weren't in San Diego last night. Perhaps they were also in the Twilight Zone. A guy who had three home runs all year long. A guy who has the same amount of home runs as his backup with 200-plus more at-bats hit a home run yesterday and blew the game open. Castellanos got on base in front of him. Those guys have stunk for a very long time. Perhaps we're not in Philadelphia or San Diego anymore. Maybe, maybe, just maybe, we are indeed in the Twilight Zone. And in the Phillies, maybe it's a good one. But a lot of weird stuff's happening right now. Fans aren't reacting to good things with the Sixers. And we notice something eerie happens. A guy who doesn't know how to hit all of a sudden relearned how to hit. And then after the game had some swag and said, I have no doubt the power's coming back. Well, why? How does he know that? He hasn't known that all season long. I'll tell you how. He knows it, just like we're starting to all realize it. JT Realmuto was speaking from the Twilight Zone. Yeah, 610-632-0975. The word of the day is margins. The Sixers got better. I don't know why anybody's unhappy. This was a good first step. Now, it's not the last step, but no one's last step. No one's last step was last night. The Sixers needed to get a player that could help them now. They did it. He's under the age of 25. He can defend. He can make threes. How about we actually try being happy about something that's good for once and not being addicted to misery? 610-632-0975. Tyrone Johnson here with you until 6 on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Tyrone Johnson here with you until 6. 610-632-0975. Connor Thomas producing today. 3 o'clock hour brought to you by Corpley's Bakery and Deli. World famous tomato pie, hoagie party trays. Every bit is good. On the line right now. Covers the Sixers for The Athletic. Oh, boy. I saw. I'll talk about it later in the show. It's just, I know it, people were watching the draft, so there was something else going on that was hilarious last night. A cultural thing that just went just plumb insane. But on the line right now, does a great job covering the Sixers for The Athletic. I have his breakdown of the trade, the Danny Green draft trade for the Anthony Melton right in front of me, Mr. Rich Hoffman on the Comcast Business Hotline. How are you today, Rich?
Hi, I'm doing good. It's always a late night, even when they only make one move, but that's okay.
Yeah, you know, I had forgot. So sometimes when I'm like trying to book somebody, I'm like, wait, it's too late. But with you, I should always text late because you're always up late having to do stuff. First things first, I thought the number one goal for the Sixers was to get a player yesterday that could help them this year and then go from there. Do you think they accomplished that step one?
Yeah, I think the generic, you know, the basic goal boiled down to its essence, which is, I agree, what you said is to get a player who can probably stick in their playoff rotation, and they did it. And it really didn't cost them a lot, frankly. I was, I don't think the Anthony Melton is an all-star by any means, but he's a good player on a good contract, and for the Sixers, for all they had to do was give up Danny Green and the 23rd pick in the draft, to me, that is good value. Now, we can talk about, you know, what position he plays and some of the other things they have to do. But, yeah, in terms of what they were trying to do, and Daryl Morey said it after last night, we're trying to win now. That's very obvious. I think they accomplished their goal.
And that's just where I'm starting from. You didn't know how the draft was going to fall. So as we're watching the draft, around pick maybe 14, 15, there were some players that were pretty, that a lot of people liked, at least guys that were watching it closer than me. Then 16, 17, 18, 19, as the next few picks came, all of a sudden, people that had this long list of guys that would be good for the Sixers at 23, they kind of started to evaporate. Do you think that played any role in them making the move, that no one that they maybe liked were falling, or do you think that they were pretty much trying to make a move for a young veteran regardless?
I think they were pretty much trying to make a move for a young vet. I mean, if something crazy happened and maybe somebody who was, you know, way up there on their board dropped, but really that didn't happen, like you said. A lot of the people who, you know, you thought might have been able to help them were, yeah, they were gone by 15, 16, something like that. So they really, I think they understand better than most that, you know, putting a rookie into a playoff atmosphere is hard. Like, it's a lot to ask, even if they're an experienced veteran college player. So to be able to get this kid who still, like, he needs to prove some stuff in the playoffs, but has been a good player, and last year was a good player on a team that made the playoffs, that was the number two seed, is a solid move. Yeah. So I think that was their goal for the most part, and you could see, like, when it came time to be their pick, they had that thing ready to go. That was something they clearly, you know, had been talking about for a long time with Memphis. So yeah, I think their goal was to make that pick, to make that trade for a bit.
Right. Now, the one thing they didn't do yesterday, and there's still time, and some people have reacted negatively to it, was they didn't really address their issues on the wing. Now, I know he has the 6'8 wingspan, like you mentioned in your story, 6'2", and there might be times where you can play Maxi, Harden, and Melton together, but that's probably not going to be something you have a large diet of doing. They're still thin there. I think you talked to Morey yesterday during his availability. Do you think that's the next step, looking for cost-effective wings to help build out the depth of this roster?
I actually asked him about it. I said, now that you've traded, because he was funny about it, because he couldn't actually mention D'Anthony Melton. He's allowed to mention Danny Green and that they traded him, but, you know, he's not allowed to mention D'Anthony Melton because of the trade. Is not official yet, but I asked him, I was like, now that you have lost Danny Green, and, you know, if you have another theoretical player in here who might not be a wing, you know, how do you feel about where you are? And he's probably the shortest answer of the night. He said, I think we probably need another wing. And I would argue they probably need two other wings, Ty, because when you look at what they have right now there, Matisse Thybulle, who we've talked about a lot, we don't need to get into that again. But it's just him, and it's, you know, Tobias Harris is a good four, but okay. And then you have George Niang, who's a little more of a regular season player behind him. I would expect, like, look, we'll see what happens with the rest of their offseason. If there are some cost-cutting moves they make, if there are some blockbuster trade that comes out of nowhere, I would lean against that. I would think with this mid-level exception they have left, with these minimums, if you are not like 6'6 or taller or 6'7 or taller and play on the wing, I'm not sure they're going to be going after you. Because, look, I think D'Anthony Melton is a guy who can play with James Harden and Tyrese Maxey, but it's probably better when he plays with one of them. So, you know, he's probably the best player they had available to them, and I commend the Sixers for going after that, but they definitely have some positional overlap there.
Yeah, for sure. And this goes back, I'm not going to relitigate the Thybulle situation. It's just that with him not being reliable offensively the way we would hope, that kind of makes sense what you just said. I agree with you. They may need one. I think they need to have two guys, because you never know if they're both going to hit when you're only paying them about $6.4 million. And the reason I say that, while this move actually saved them some money in that they sent out $10 million, plus what would have been the cost of the 23rd overall pick, and only took $8.25 million back, that doesn't help them as far as being a non-taxpayer and having that full non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So how much money could you tell the people, how much money you think they'll be able to work with, unless they make another move to cut costs?
It's about $6.4 million. They can give that to somebody. And look, you know, I think that's opposed to the $10 million. That's the larger mid-level exception, which you thought they might have if they just cut Danny. They just, like, let him go. To me, I actually think they made the right move. I would rather have D'Anthony Melton and whatever they can get for $6 million than the 23rd pick and the $10 million guy and also get hard gap. So it's not a criticism of what they did. It's just they had a couple of different options, and this is the one they took. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, P.J. Tucker has been the, the rumored guy over the past couple of days. I'm sure you've talked about him, on the show with all the rumors and stuff. They can't afford what he's rumored to be getting, which is the larger mid-level exception right now. Maybe they can make some other moves to get there, but as we stand right now, I'm not sure they can get PJ Tucker unless he's willing to take less money, which at 37 years old, my guess would be no.
Yeah, and you know what? At that point, I'm actually okay with it. Now, talking to Rich Hoffman, covers the Sixers for the Athletic. One thing that I had a couple people, at least one person called today, and people keep fixating on, and I'm hoping that you can help us with this, and I know you said this before, but you repeating it would really, really help. For some reason, people think that the Sixers should be making backup center a priority, while I think they should ride with the two young guys they have and force Doc Rivers to have to play one of them and figure out which one or both can play. And if neither can play and they give them to the trade deadline, then maybe if you want to make a move for a backup center because you see it as a huge need, fine. Do you think that with their limited resources this offseason, they should spend it signing another backup center to back up Joel Embiid?
I don't, Ty. I think the one thing I would push back on, like on what I just said, I don't think they should, and I don't think they will, because Morey was asked about it last night. He said, you know, it's going to be a high bar for a minimum contract for backup centers. The problem is, this is a good problem to have. Backup centers can be had for minimum contracts. Good ones, like serviceable ones. We saw it last year. Andre Drummond, minimum contract. That's a pretty good backup center. But I like what they have in Reed and Bassey. I think, you know, as much as Reed did well in the playoffs, like he sink or swim in the playoffs, I thought he held up for the most part. Good job by him. Bassey is a guy who's arguably, you know, some people in that organization will tell you, like, has more potential long-term as kind of a more, you know, more standard rim protector and a rim runner, a guy who can catch lobs. And he had some moments earlier in the season, too. So no, I don't think they should go after it, and I honestly don't think they will. I think they will prioritize the wings more than that.
Yeah, and the reason is, you mentioned the sink or swim situation, and there are fans who are rightfully, and I know you've written it at times in the past, that Doc Rivers has not always been patient with young players. Well, by not adding another backup center, he's now, Embiid's not going to play 48 minutes. So now he'll be forced to play a backup, a young player at that center spot. And I think it might be time, especially when you have the financial situation that they have, to maybe let a few young guys sink or swim because you don't have a choice. I think that's a good thing, especially if you could add more athleticism on that wing.
Yeah, and I get why you're getting a lot of calls that fans are scarred by that position. I think it's totally fair to be scarred. It's a ridiculous position to be the Achilles heel of this franchise for the past 7 years. But I think now that they have some of these young guys in here, we're back to normalcy. Like, it's a depth position. It's not the biggest deal in the world. With Embiid, you obviously need somebody who can play, but if you draft well enough late in the first round, late in the second round, which is what both of these guys were, these guys can be had for cheap and not spending a lot of resources on it, unlike Al Horford, you know, $27 million.
Right, and the last thing I want to ask you about, I don't know about Julian, about the Julian, the kid from St. John's that they got. I don't know a lot about him. Could you fill people in about him? Because honestly, I didn't see him play very much.
No, I really haven't either too much time. He came last night, you know, just, you know, athletic forward type, basically the type of guy that you'd like to take a two-way on, you know, hope he can kind of catch up skill-wise with his shooting and all of those things. But yeah, like a 6'8 athletic forward type who they'll give a shot in the G League. And those, I think those generally, like they have, sometimes in the past they have spent their two-way contracts on smaller guards. I am not as big of a fan of that. I would rather spend it on a wing athletic type and, you know, hope he can teach that guy to play basketball a little bit. So that's generally the philosophy here.
All right, well, listen, thanks so much, Rich. We greatly appreciate it. Now, next week is free agency, and we'll see if they make any, I guess if a blockbuster's going to come, we'll start to hear about it sometime next week as free agency actually begins.
Yep, James Harden contract too next week, probably.
Yes, so. Yes, and I'm very interested in that. I know he said we can't really speak, even though I don't know if I fully believe that. And he said, but there's mutual love, a mutual love fest, so he'll be back. We'll just find out how, right?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Appreciate it, Rich. And enjoy your weekend.
See you, man.
All right. That was Rich Hoffman on the Comcast Business Hotline. Covers the Sixers for the Athletic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Smooth. 97.5 The Fanatic. NBC Sports Philadelphia. Tyrone Johnson here until 6, 610-632-0975. Brian Westbrook with us the entire 4 o'clock hour. Time to update our Twitter poll powered by Paul B. Moyer Sons in Doylestown.
All right, so we got two Twitter polls now. We'll start with the first one. How do you feel about the Sixers draft night trade of Danny Green and number 23 overall for DeAnthony Melton? Over 850 votes on this one, still leading the way. 67% of responders saying great, they got better. 27% saying it won't change anything. And 6% saying upset, wanted bigger move. So that's holding steady. On our newest Twitter poll, is it okay to brag about taking walks in a slow pitch softball game? 88% of people are saying no. A shocking 12% are saying yes, though. So there are some people out there who agree with me.
Where did that come from? Where did that 12? Who were those 12% of people that are saying, yeah, four balls in a slow pitch softball game, didn't even take the bat off your shoulder, is something to brag.
Well, I cashed out the $272 in my checking account, and I sent it out to a couple friends, and I was like, do me a solid here.
This is what you lost. You won that money, but you lost your pride.
Right. And dignity.
My pride's very much still intact. I'm good here. My pride is ironclad. It may be falsely so, but it is.
All right. Now, here it is. With the cost of gas in this economy, imagine driving to a game, getting ready to stand, and not swing. Yeah, that's true. So you talk about you spent $200 in gas.
I play exceptional defense.
Sure you do. I mean, are you kidding me? Another guy, I swing at the first pitch every time if it's anywhere close to the plate. That's what you're supposed to do. You're there to swing.
Right. That's right.
I bat leadoff. I take the first pitch every time.
So what? No. You only bat leadoff once.
And here's the other thing. Let's clarify this as well. It's a 1-1 count. So it only takes three balls to walk. It doesn't make it much better, but it's slightly different.
And you got your chest puffed out. Look at me. My on-base percentage. Why are you keeping track of that?
Well, because the Oakland A's, they're not doing great this year. I know my man Billy Bean is still out there looking for guys who can get on base. I'm waiting for the call.
I just think that this has to be a generational thing. But I can't even say that because no one in your generation agrees with you.
Nope.
Like, why are you conducting yourself like that?
I want people to throw me strikes. If they throw me strikes, I will swing at the strikes.
Oh, boy. I never thought this, but we need a palate cleanser of sanity, and we're going to get it from Dave in Center City. You're a 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Dave?
Hey, look, bravo to the Sixers, but let's get to the good stuff, the Philadelphia Eagles. But, you know, real quick, the publication called the Philly Voice comprised the list ranking every Eagle running back with at least 150 carries. Now, due to time constraints, I'm going to give you the top five in ascending order. They got Deuce Staley, number 5, Wilbert, number 4, LeSean, number 3, Steve Van Buren, number 2, and, of course, number 1, the icon, the showstopper, Brian Collins Westbrook.
I didn't see
Philly
that.
Voice.
Let me check that out. I like that list.
Yeah, I have no issues with the list, but now so you jumped all over the place. Though, like, what happened to you talking about the Eagles offseason?
Oh, you ready?
Yeah.
Well, currently, the over-under total for the Eagles is 8.5. I've already put a half a stack on that. They go over. Their odds to win the Super Bowl are 28-1. I put a few shekels on that.
I'm against
that. Not bad, right?
Nah, not good either, though.
All right, and, you know, I took voluminous notes with the schedule. I will be at the Steelers game, Mischief Night, October 31st. All my buddies from Duquesne are coming up. The Eagles will go 7-0 after that game, but then they stub their toe that Thursday night. They got to go out to Houston. That game's going to end up in a tie. The Eagles finish 16-0-1. Yeah, gentlemen, your retort.
No, hold on. There's much higher stakes than that because we kept the tape. It's in our system. Now, Brian, Dave said that if the Eagles don't go 17-0 or 16-0-1, he'll never call again.
Dave doesn't mean that.
He said it on the record.
Does he think that that's going to actually happen?
Yeah, that's what he said. That's what he said, Brian. And unfortunately, due to the bosses, we're going to have to hold them to it because they think that perhaps Dave isn't always 100% on the level when he calls into us or to Sound Off.
Well, I like Dave, so I want him to call back. Dave, I can't hold you accountable for that type of that's a crazy prediction. You know, but the only reason you're saying those types of things is because you bleed green. Just like so many other people in the city, you're just saying those things because it sounds good to say it at the time. There's no way you actually believe that, right, Dave?
No, he's gone.
But, oh, my God, you let him go?
I had to. Ran out of time, but he doesn't really, I think he does. The problem is, Dave also admits that sometimes he'll get hammered drunk, call Sound Off, and not remember what he said.
Oh, well, that's something different. You're talking, you know.
I'm just saying. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, Brian, we're talking to Brian Westbrook the entire hour, 610-632-0975. It's not a main thing because we haven't been talking about the Flyers like that, but Joel Farabee, the season ended a while ago. He then, we come to find out, I don't think anybody even knew he was seriously, seriously hurt. We now find out that he waited, apparently quite a while, and had successful disc replacement surgery in his cervical region, and he's going to be out for 3 to 4 months. Now, his back had to have been bothering him previous, like as the season was playing out, if he had to have something this serious, you would agree with that, right?
Yes, yeah.
And my question is, why not shut him down earlier in a season where you're definitely not going anywhere and get this surgery with the hopes he can make a recovery? Now he can miss the beginning of next season if everything goes perfect. And who knows with a back. Wouldn't it have made more sense from the organizational standpoint if he knows he's going to have to at least look at a surgery to shut him down earlier when the season was already over? And be honest, the season was over January 1st. So anytime after that, they could have shut him down. And he could have had this surgery and been ready for October. It's just certain things like that make me question the organization. If this was football, and the season you guys are 2-8, and you know you badly need a back surgery, wouldn't the team and you guys think about getting it then so that you would be ready for the following season?
Well, generally, and this is actually a common misconception. So generally speaking, the teams will say, hey, maybe we can do some rehab. Let's say that there's a situation where if rehab could work, mm-hmm. and you can strengthen that area, do some different things, get the swelling out, strengthen that area, and maybe you can not have surgery, then they'll try that before they perform surgery, right?
Okay.
Especially when you're back, right? So
yeah,
that may be the case. Now, let's say it's an ACL. Then
that's different.
You know, we already know. You're going to have surgery, and usually those surgeries happen pretty quickly. But if you're in a situation where you may be able to save yourself from being cut on a surgery, then you try to do that first. And then if that doesn't work, then, of course, you do it a little bit later. So sometimes these surgeries happen a little bit later than we all would think they would because of that. And other times they say, hey, we just want the swelling to go down a little bit. So sometimes there are some medical reasons why these surgeries are put off just a bit.
Right, but they didn't shut him down was my point. He ended up playing all the way to the end, then waited over a month, and then got the surgery. So my thing was, if you shut them down earlier, mm-hmm. you can begin some of those things to decide if you figure out you need surgery. They didn't start to apparently look at this until the conclusion of a season in which you knew that they were going nowhere. They were the fourth worst team in all of the NHL.
Well, listen, who wants to get shut down early?
You got Your back is messed up, man. You need cervical. This sounds disc replacement surgery. That sounds major to me.
Those tough guys in hockey, you telling me that they want to be shut down?
The team was the fourth worst in the game.
They want to say, hey, man, I don't want to play? Hey, come on, man. You got to. Those are some tough dudes, man. I played with a lot of tough dudes that played through a lot of crazy stuff, including, you know, that needed surgery on their back, and they didn't want to get shut down because that's part of their legacy. So I understand players wanting to play through stuff like that.
I'm saying the team doctor says you're not cleared because of your back. Like you can. I know you want to play. You're not cleared. You're not medically cleared.
Yeah,
that's my the players. Honestly, outside of Ben Simmons, and I mean this, I don't think I've ever really heard about many athletes around in this city who did want to play through stuff. Whether it was five, hell, Carson Wentz played with a broken back.
Yep.
I'm saying almost everybody, and he's not the pillar of everything we want in a player. In fact, outside of Simmons, the player always wants to play. I think that's always the push and the pull. But I think sometimes the team has to step in, and I know they don't like to do that and say, you can't play, because obviously you want. Right now, I know you wouldn't literally play right now, but for a certain amount of money, you'd halfway try to suit up now.
Yes. There is a number that I have in my mind that I would be out there working out in the middle of the summer.
That's what I mean. But a doctor would have to look at your knees and say, Brian, you're not cleared. We can't let you do it. That's the point.
The doctor and my wife, and they'd be like, what are you doing? They wouldn't need to look at the knees. They would just say, what are you doing?
Right.
No, you're right about that. But yeah, but go tell one of these guys that has worked his butt off to be able to play however many games, that you just go sit out. And he's going to tell you that, that's not my character. That's not who I am. I can understand guys and teams saying, hey, we think we should shut you down. And I'm going to him like, no, you're not going to shut me down. That's not what I'm made of. I want to play all the games because that's who I'm made of. I've heard of stories like that. I've seen players like that. There's a part of me that was a big time, just like that. Like, hey, man, I don't want to be shut down. I can go out there and play 85%, 75%, mm-hmm. and I'll still be okay. Not everybody's made that way. Not everybody thinks that way, but there are a lot of players that do.
Yeah, and it's just it's a little bit it's a little.
How
bit
much nuts. Of the season will he miss?
Well, he's out 3 to 4 months if it goes correctly. We're in June, July, August, September, October. He could just miss the beginning, but that's if it goes perfectly. It sounds like when somebody's doing a disc replacement, there's some wiggle room on it not going perfect. And that's why I would prefer to do it early if need be to give you extra time in case you have a setback with your rehab.
Yeah, setbacks can happen anytime. But right. Again, I'm with you there.
Yeah, and he if he's one setback away from definitely missing time, if everything goes perfect, he can make it back for the beginning. But if anything happens, he'll absolutely miss time into next season. And that's what I would try to avoid, especially with how bad they were. 3-minute break. Bill from Williamstown is going to hold Connor accountable on the other side, followed by Tom. We got Brian Westbrook for another segment. Only a 3-minute break here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.